Hey, everybody, welcome to another Monday edition of the Good E-Reader Radio Show. My name is Michael, and of course, I'm joined by Digital Book World's own Jeremy Greenfield. Jeremy, what is new in the realm of digital publishing and tablets?
Oh, you know, this and that, that and this, the usual.
So I guess the major story today is Amazon and how they have released a firmware update for their latest generation line of tablets and have finally incorporated Goodreads integration.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what people expected with the Goodreads acquisition, and Amazon is delivering a tighter integration with the platform. And there are a lot of places where Goodreads is hooked in, and where readers who are both Kindle users and Goodreads users now have some very seamless ways that they can interact with Goodreads while they're reading books on their Kindle.
So, for those of you who are unfamiliar, Amazon purchased Goodreads, I believe, in March for about $100 million.
We don't know how much it was. We don't know how much it was.
Well, I was told it was $100 million.
Fair enough.
Okay. So that, you know, it may or may not be that specific dollar amount, but I was told by people at Goodreads and people at Amazon that the figure that I just quoted was the figure that it was purchased for. So basically, Goodreads is the largest social ebook and community-based site. There's probably more reviews there than any other third-party site out there. And a lot of authors, I believe that there's about 76,000 authors that belong to Goodreads. And when Amazon purchased it, they really wanted to boost up their own social ebook discovery network engine. And overall, Jeremy, what are your impressions about, you know, I know we've talked about the Goodreads acquisition before. What do you think that this means to your average user that has just bought a Kindle, just got it for Christmas and whatnot? What does Goodreads do for them?
Well, I think should that person decide to read ebooks on their Kindle Fire device and they are social, they will find a very user-friendly place to organize their reading and organize their reading life. And Goodreads is very well hooked into Facebook. And so it will be very easy for them, if they want to get started with Goodreads. I suspect that, you know, Goodreads, unlike Facebook or Twitter or the other large social networks, is somewhat of a niche play. And so not every reader, or not every Kindle Fire purchaser will want to get involved. But should they want to, they'll find a pretty seamless experience to go from discovering that it exists to going ahead and using it. Now, for people who already have Goodreads and are Kindle readers, they will find that all the things that they like doing with Goodreads, sharing books and sharing quotes and reviews and importing and monitoring their lists, will be integrated pretty nicely with the Kindle Fire platform.
Yeah, it seems to me, I've been reviewing and you know, Kindle e-readers and tablets ever since they basically started making them way back when. And I feel that in the past, the Kindle experience was buying books, looking at book descriptions, reading people's reviews, and making a purchasing decision, and then reading a book on my own, and not really having an avenue to discuss that book other than people that I know in real life or people that, you know, you leave a comment or you leave your own review. That was really the only way that you interacted with other book readers. Now with Amazon, they have sort of that interaction, virtual book clubs and all of that type of stuff that just goes beyond, you know, what they offered in the past. And I kind of dig this social fabric that they are trying to not ram down people's throats, but as sort of like a supplementary offer to the overall Kindle experience. Because I know with my taste in books, I don't know if you're the same, but it's seldom are any of my friends enamored with the same type of books that I am, you know? And so when I read a good book, chances are none of my friends have read that book. And so I don't really have a lot of people to talk to about that book and, you know, talk about the author and, you know, just to dive into the semantics of the book. what about yourself? Do you have like a lot of friends have the same taste in fiction and nonfiction as you do?
You know, I have a good core group that we all share book recommendations, and it doesn't go that far outside of that. And surprisingly, I know you're going to be surprised by this, most of those people don't read ebooks, and so we kind of just share our thoughts about books through the traditional channels, email and a little bit social media. But if you read on Kindle, you know that you'll find many people have underlined quotes in books that you've read, and that is a great way to get into talking to people about the books that you love, even if, like you said, for yourself, you don't know them directly, you have this connection with them. And this is kind of the final piece of the puzzle for the Amazon reading experience. Some of the other platforms, I think like Kobo most notably, is trying to build social into the experience. Amazon perhaps went the other way, built a massive platform of users, and then acquired the social experience and is now integrating that social experience. One of the most significant things I think about this integration is that Amazon is now making it very easy for you to import all of the books that you purchased through Amazon to your Goodreads bookshelf.
Well, it seems to me that obviously, the integration of Goodreads just went in today. So it'll be a while to understand what type of traction it's getting, how many users are actually participating in it. Do you think that like Kobo and Barnes & Noble and these other e-reading companies that sell both e-readers and e-books, do you think that they're worried or they're put on notice at all about this?
You know, they are pretty well hooked into Goodreads already. Not the same level of integration by any means, but obviously people who read on Nooks and Kobo devices and other devices or just in print are using Goodreads as well. So I think, first of all, it doesn't shut out the other ebook companies from benefiting from the success of Goodreads. That said, I think what they're going to watch very closely is how well this works for Amazon as a way to keep people reading, keep people buying, keep people engaged. And if it works very well, these companies will probably have to step up their game when it comes to their own social experiences. Now, how they'll do that is really anyone's guess.
All right. So as everyone knows, we live in a world of personalization. Customers now enjoy the type of flexibility to customize their car, customize like their PC, to customize almost everything in their life. Instead of just buying something off the shelf, you can get, you know, you could add your own personal flair. Motorola just released a new campaign that will allow you to change the color of your camera, of your phone, of the phone accents. And I know Amazon just announced last week that they're going to allow people to design their own cases for the Kindles. Costs roughly about $45, $50, but you can upload your own design. You can upload a picture of your kid, and Amazon will print that on the case and then send it out to you. Now, Sourcebooks has gone an extra step in the world of personalization.
Yeah, Sourcebooks has something called Put Me in the Story. It launched about a little bit less than a year ago. And what it is it's a platform that allows parents, friends, grandparents, et cetera, mostly if it's children's books at this point, to put the likeness and name of their child into the actual book. And this is an ebook, but it's also in print books. And Sourcebooks has signed a number of deals with Sesame Street, Berenstain Bears, and most recently, last week, Hello Kitty, to bring those brands on board so you can put the kid in with their favorite characters from those brands. You know, the CEO of Sourcebooks, Dominique Rocca, is very bullish on this. She said that her company is going to be up 25% this year in revenue, and that things like Put Me in the Story are a big part of that. And next year, the full 20% of the company's revenue is going to come from things like Put Me in the Story. This company is very innovative, very experimental, and Put Me in the Story is sort of at the center of it. She also said that it's not going to end at children's books, that there are going to be adult picture books with Put Me in the Story featured functionality, personalization, and that babies and gifts are going to be a very big part of their business. They formed a deal with the award-winning photographer Ann Geddes, to do personalized baby books. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work, but they're very excited about it.
It's very interesting. I also spoke with Dominique when she first launched this, and I think that they were kind of unsure on the public acceptance of it and how many people would actually be using it. But, you know, thousands of people are, you know, personalizing their books by putting their kids in it. And I think that that's fairly compelling because, you know, especially as your kid grows older, it's one of those nice things that kind of like, you know, pull out of a dusty box, you know, and show them it, you know, to kind of, as they get older, to be like, hey, remember this. It's a good bonding thing. It's a good bonding process, I think.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of the really telling things about the Put Me in the Story platform is that they have gotten thousands of people to buy it. And on exit surveys, they found that 95% of the people who bought it thought it was a quote-unquote good idea, and 85% of the people who bought it plan on coming back to buy it again. So it could be something that takes off. Now, I spoke with a number of publishing experts last week about personalization, and you know, they're not nearly as bullish as Dominique is. They think it's very niche, that it's going to be only with children's publishing, you know, but of course, time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have options, and I think that Sourcebooks is, they're not the first people to put something like this together, but they're probably one of the largest companies with deep pockets to actually make something like this work.
Now, yeah, you know, in the past, personalization for books has been mostly self-published works, mostly, you know, amateur efforts or very low-level efforts, and
yeah.
The difference here might be the big brands. So, you know, I suppose it could be interesting to open a book and see your picture and see your name in there and sort of read a story that has something to do with you. But maybe it's a little bit more exciting for the child to be there with Elmo or the Berenstain Bears family or Hello Kitty. And maybe that's what will help it be successful should it be long lasting.
That, and it makes like a... It makes like a unique gift that probably a child would have not got before. So if you're like a grandparent and you only really see maybe your grandkids maybe like once or twice a year, this would be like a cool little gift that they would, you know, remember you by because they get, you know, kids just don't read a book once, but often that same book is read to them time and time again, you know, as a bedtime story. So it's kind of a cool personalized gift that is fairly unique. So chances are a kid wouldn't have never have got something like this before. So
right.
Let's talk about new devices. There's been a number of new e-readers and tablets that have come out over the course of about the last week. First of all, the new Barnes & Noble Nook Glow Light came out, and the Apple iPad Mini with Retina display. Let me tell you a little bit about both devices, because we have not only reviewed them, but comprehensively compared them to the older iterations of the same device as well as their competitors. So the Nook Glow Light, I feel, was probably one of the best offerings that Barnes & Noble has made to date. The Glow Light versus the first generation is it's white. And the original Simple Touch with Glow Light, when you turn the light on, it was really blue. It kind of had this blue tinge, and it really wasn't that great. The new e-reader is, the screen is about as white when you turn the brightness up to max as the Kindle Paperwhite and the Kobo Aura is, but I feel that it feels a little bit clunky, and if you compare the Nook Glow against, say, the Kobo Aura, the Kindle Paperwhite 2, on paper, their specs are a little bit better, and they're more accessible for your average customer to buy. So if you buy one on eBay and you live in Canada, you can't really use the Nook, but you could, you know, obviously buy a Kindle or a Kobo right on a shelf. And I feel that on a more international market, because North America isn't the only, you know, continent in the world. And so I feel that probably Kobo and Kindle are probably the better investments up until this point. But I feel that Barnes & Noble made a solid effort in releasing a Z-reader, but I don't know if I'm too overwhelmed with it.
Yeah, you know, the specs, as you mentioned, are a little bit lighter than for the comparable e-readers. But, you know, give Barnes & Noble credit for coming to the table with, you know, basically what is now considered top of the line, more or less. But, as you said, and I think this is really the pertinent point, they're not as portable as some of the other devices, and they don't have as many options, and really it's sort of a U.S. and U.K. thing right now. And I think, you know, if you look at what's happening with the landscape, and not that many buyers will, but if you do look at it, you know, you probably feel a little bit more secure buying a Kindle device or an iPad or even a Kobo device, knowing that these companies are expanding, they're going international. I mean, Barnes & Noble is having a lot of trouble expanding internationally, has had a lot of trouble here domestically, has this, you know, bricks and mortar retail business to deal with. So, you know, I would be asking a lot of questions personally about that. So I agree with everything you said. I think that it would be a little bit difficult to go with the Barnes & Noble device over the others right now.
Yeah, I mean, I really wish that, considering how much money the Barnes & Noble spends on its ecosystem of ebooks and hardware, you'd figure when they were to release a new generation device, it would be better than the devices that have been on the market already for many months. And because this device has to be relevant, not only right now, but a year from now, if they do decide to release a new e-reader. And I feel that already, as soon as it came out, it wasn't as good as those other devices, and Kobo tends to release devices earlier than both Amazon and any of the other major companies. So I wonder if this will sell well. I know that the one very pro factor about the Nook is that it enjoys prime real estate in hundreds of Barnes & Noble bookstores and college bookstores in the U.S. And so they've priced it fairly reasonable. I believe it's just over $100, and undoubtedly it'll experience price drops like Barnes & Noble's entire product line has saw this year in all markets. Do you think that...
Let me interrupt you there for a second, though, because I don't know if the in-store display is such a huge advantage for Barnes & Noble. I mean, you know, the company's been selling the Nooks in stores for a long time, and for a long time it's been losing the battle against Amazon. So I wonder what kind of an advantage this in-store display really is.
Well, I know that this year, like early on in 2013, Barnes & Noble increased the Nook space. So almost in all bookstores, they increased like the display area in which they sold e-readers, tablets, accessories, you know, whatever, right? It used to be like a little area, you know, 25, maybe 30 square feet. And in some cases, it's increased to like 200 square feet. So they're really trying to put an emphasis on selling them. But something has to be said about the retail environment. As you probably know, I mean, Target and a number of other stores don't even stock Kindles anymore. And if you're e-readers and tablets are in prime real estate locations in these stores, not only the bookstores, but also, you know, in tech stores and big box stores, wouldn't you figure that that would help drive sales?
I mean, you assume. That's the theory. And I think that's one of the things that Kobo is operating under worldwide. I mean, Kobo has attempted to make strong bonds with major booksellers around the world. So certainly Kobo believes that. Kobo has done something with the American Booksellers Association that we actually discussed recently because Amazon has now offering a similar deal called Amazon Stores where if you're a bookseller, you can sell Kindle devices and Kindle ebooks. So everyone believes in it to some degree. I don't know if it actually sells devices, though. That's what I'd really like to know.
Well, I think bookstores sell devices. Kobo famously has said on many occasions that you might find like a Kindle in like a Best Buy or one of those big tech chains and things like that. But primarily, they put the e-readers and tablets on sale where the readers are, which are bookstores. People are more likely to buy an e-reader at a bookstore than they are to buy it from, say, like a Walmart or like a Best Buy or something like that. And that kind of makes sense, you know, like on a philosophical level, would you really sell an e-reader in a tech store where you have a different segment of customers than a bookstore where people are there to buy books? You know, people aren't in a bookstore for any other reason, to like buy books, buy magazines, to buy content in some form. And so e-readers in that type of environment makes sense, because that's your core demographic. Those are the people that want to buy your stuff. And I think that that strategy outside of North America for Kobo has done really well. You know, you look at Funac and like all those companies that they deal with, they put all their e-readers in Spain and France and in the UK, in those WH Smith shops, you know, in the big chains. I hear sales are good. You know, obviously the company is flush with cash and they're doing well. I just don't know how well this Barnes & Noble device will go. I mean, it'll probably do well for Christmas this year because it's new. It's an upgraded device. They're doing television spots on it. It's going to be, like, you know, promoted in stores. Aside from that, a new iPad with Retina display is out. I have used it quite extensively, and I really dig it. I think that it's a solid second-generation iPad mini, and it's the best one. So if you have like the first generation iPad mini, you owe it to yourself to upgrade to this device. It's a little bit heavier. It's about the same price as the old one was new, but you have double the resolution. The processor is super fast. Cameras are relatively the same. A lot of specs under the hood are the same, but the resolution enhancement allows you to finally watch HD movies. If you like reading magazines and comic books, everything's higher resolution. So if you play games, it has like a quad-core graphics processor now. So if you play like those Infinity Blade type games or whatever those big games are that are like a gig or two to download that offer a lot of gameplay elements, that's going to be played a lot better. So I feel that the iPad mini is going to do really well this year.
It seems like a great device. I've heard amazing things from it. And from a book reading perspective, it seems to me that something like the iPad mini makes a little bit more sense as a sort of carry around and read books device versus the full-size iPad.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that that's when Goody Reader, when we review these devices, we only look at it from an e-reading perspective. You know, we don't test games or anything like that. We show you how everything looks. And putting the Retina Mini against the one that came out last year, you really saw the differences, even in our YouTube videos, how text even on an ebook looks less pixelated. The blacks have a deeper, like, darker feel to it. And I just feel, yeah, I mean, if you're an Apple user and you have the first generation, you're really going to miss out on a lot of awesome stuff if you don't get the second one. So aside from new devices and personalization and some Amazon news, is there anything else happening in industry?
Well, this is a little bit of a softball here, but as you probably know, we're getting ready for Digital Book World in a couple of months, and it's really shaping up to be the biggest and best Digital Book World ever. We've got a full day of workshops on various interesting stuff like ebooks. Oh, well, here's something. There is a discoverability story that came out this weekend. And I believe you wrote this, a new discovery site called Stumblery, perhaps that's how you pronounce it, which is supposed to be like Stumble Upon for ebooks. But we'll have a couple of sessions, Digital Book World and ebook discovery. And you know, I think you and I are of the same mind of this with ebook discovery, is that this is not a problem that most consumers face, and it's really a problem that publishers are more worried about than anything. So that's what I'm working on mostly, is getting ready for that conference.
Yeah, I mean, for us, we're getting ready for the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, in Las Vegas, which I guess is just your conference is a few days after. So it's to Las Vegas in really early January, and then to Digital Book World in New York. And Yeah, I mean, I guess in 2014, there's going to be a lot of kind of really cool events. We're stoked to go back to Taiwan this year for Computex and to check out, you know, the scene there. We missed it last year. And I tend to go to those events like once every 2 years, because if you go every year, it's basically the same stuff. But if you kind of give it a year, there's all this, you know, wearable tech is the buzzword now. You know, people have like the smart watches, the smart accessories. Samsung is trying to really pioneer like the screens that curve, like the curved display stuff. So you don't have bezels anymore. The screen kind of like goes around to where a bezel used to be. And so it's very interesting. I think this whole 3D printing, wearable tech, that seems to be kind of the brave new frontier. Same with like DIY drones. That seems to be like the three big things that are going to be at CES this year. And then in Computex in Taiwan and like all these big shows. So kind of excited to check all that out. So you guys that are listening to the show, you would be best served to keep abreast of the entire digital publishing e-reader tablet space by visiting goodyreader.com and Digital Book World. You might do very well for yourself if you're in the publishing industry or if you have a vested interest in it to check out the Digital Book World event. On this post, we will update links where you could find out more information. You can sign up and you could see why yourself, why all of the industry people make this the definitive North American, if not worldwide, event of the year. So you've been listening to the Goody Reader Radio Show, and we hope you enjoyed this Monday edition, and we'll talk to you later.